Hi, this is the Reason TV Talk Show. I'm Nick Gillespie, your host. My co-host is Michael C. Moynihan of Reason. And our guests today are Tucker Carlson, newly minted Cato Fellow, and Veronique Duverger, a Reason columnist and an economist at George Mason's Mercatus Center. Tucker, let's start with you. You have recently joined the Cato Institute.
Yes.
What happened? What does the fox mean by that?
It was the product of many lunches with Ed Crane, whom I love and respect and think is interesting and funny, more important.
Right.
And I admire Cato. I like Cato. I'm writing a book on libertarianism, and he said, you know, we'd love to help you. And I said, I'd love to be affiliated. So,
What do you consider yourself a libertarian?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a strict libertarian. I think there are some libertarian ideas that are kind of crackpot.
Like personal freedom?
Disastrous. I think there is a kind of pacifist streak sometimes in its official foreign policy positions.
So you're objectively anti-Arab?
No, I'm actually not anti-Arab at all. I've spent a lot of time in the Arab world.
And you like to go and invade people?
Of course not. Yeah. I just think that there are bad people out there.
Chills.
And... you know, it's worth.
So, who are the pacifist libertarians that you're?
I don't know. Ron Paul, for instance, whom I like personally very much. I was the MC of the Ron Paul convention, so I don't think I need to prove my
theories. Tucker, let's interrupt there. You didn't make it through the whole.
I did. Because the 9/11 deniers showed up and irritated me.
You know, they even have calendars where it just skips from the 10th of September to the 12th. It's like an elevator back through history.
But at CPAC, which we'll discuss in a second, where you
the
were,
conservative political action, whatever.
That's right.
Where you were booed for daring to suggest the New York Times is a decent newspaper and that we should adhere to facts. During that speech, which we'll talk about that in a second, you referred to yourself as a conservative, right?
I don't know. I probably
did. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we have tape.
I use it interchangeably.
What is the essence then of your political ideology?
Sort of back off and leave me alone. That's always the essence. But I think of myself as a libertarian because I also adhere, I try to the flip side of that, which is I try to back off and let other people alone. Something that that most Americans have a pretty tough time doing.
Unlike they're a foreigner and then you want to invade them.
I reject that pretty aggressively. No, but let me just say, just to give you an example, Ron Paul, again, whom I respect and like very much and agree with on virtually everything.
And you wrote a very flattering and great story for the New Republic.
I think you're actually illustrating one of the reasons I say that I'm not a strict libertarian because there is these series of kind of purity tests which I find annoying. But when
I think
Ron
there
Paul,
should only be purity tests for drugs.
When Ron Paul got up and said that 9/11 was the result of our foreign policy, it came too close for my taste to blaming the United States for 9/11, which was not our fault. You know, it was an outrage and unfair, and we didn't deserve it. And to suggest otherwise, I think is wrong. I disagree with that.
But would you agree that that terrorist attacks and things like that? I mean, that American foreign policy does have a role to play in that.
Of course, it does.
Yeah, just as American foreign policy had roles to play in the way that World War II started, World War I, conceivably.
Of course, all policy has consequences, including foreign policy.
So you would have wanted him to end his sentence by saying. And other factors.
No, I would want him to begin his sentence by saying there is no justification for what they did to us on 9/11. However, I think that our foreign policy can be counterproductive. I would agree with that. Yep. But to leave the impression that we deserved it or earned it is wrong.
No.
And I wish more libertarians had stood up and said the same thing, but they didn't.
I actually didn't get that impression from him. I mean, I don't. But you know, it's not necessarily worth talking about or debating that point. But I don't think that he was saying we deserved it or we earned it in a way that I think some anti-war people did. You know, including and right in the wake of 9/11, Jerry Falwell and. Pat Robertson, said that this was God's vengeance on America.
There is a streak within the sort of isolationist libertarian wing of the party or wing of the movement that is obsessed with root causes. And at the sort of ignoring everything else and saying, well, what did we do to deserve this, in isolating every other part of foreign policy.
Well, that's just masochism. And I also believe in preemptive strikes. They have to be justified.
Was Iraq justified?
No, of course not. It was completely unjustified. It was insane. It was totally in every way wrong.
What were the preemptive strikes?
Look, as a matter of principle, if you believe someone's going to strike you in the face, strike them first. Think someone's going to assault your wife, shoot them. I mean, this is like a basic...
I agree, but then what are the instances in history that were preemptive wars or preemptive strikes that were justified?
I'm not sure that any come immediately to mind. I'm just saying that the principle itself is worth not dismissing.
Yeah. Do you think how does foreign policy factor into the larger GOP crack up, which was part of what was going on at CPAC, right?
Well,
I mean, you were witnessing a bunch of nut jobs just fall apart.
Well, it's central to it. I mean, in my view, the modern Republican Party, or parts of it, resemble the kind of old-fashioned Democratic Party, you know? They have the same sort of basic ideas that Woodrow Wilson had, which I think were insane then and are insane now, that we have a moral obligation to intervene by force to improve the living standards of other nations. I think that that's just wrong.
Obama is not far from that.
Not far from that. He openly espouses it.
What about the economic issues? Because, Veronique, you write a lot about economics and fiscal and monetary policy, and that's what you've been covering in your Reason columns especially. How important was Bush's economic disaster to the end of Republican rule?
I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not a political scientist. But, I mean, from what I saw, I think they lost all their credibility by being massive spenders. And right now, they're not about to recover their credibility, because when you listen to Republicans, they always talk about how Obama is a big spend and tax guy without ever acknowledging that, you know, a lot of the spending was built by the Republicans.
Amen.
Like the stimulus bill. I mean, like, we're going to have a massive deficit, but more important, massive outlays, almost $4 trillion in 2009. Most of that, like really most of that, with the exception of maybe $200 billion, were, you know, passed by Republicans, you know, with the stimulus, with Republican vote, not the stimulus, but the bailout with Republican votes. Right. So it's hard to tell. I mean, I kind of have the feeling that, you know, partisan people are like, high, constantly, that they're willing to completely just forget about the things they did yesterday. Right. And so it's
What was the growth of spending in Bush's first term? Because you've charted that.
Like, I mean, it's like 35%. It was one of the biggest. But like yesterday, I was looking at actually the spending growth, because now we have the data for 9 years, and it was 104% in real terms. And like, and I think for Clinton, it was less than 15% in real term of spending growth for two terms. It's like, it's gigantic. And granted, like the last year of Bush, we saw in nominal terms a 32% increase between 2008 and 2009, and that's mainly the bailout, takeover of Freddie and Fannie. That's a glorious Republican legacy, you know, and all that stuff. So,
well, at least with deflation, those dollars will go farther, right?
Yes. Yeah. And then
barrels.
It's really great,
sure,
because
right.
American.
Yeah. Yeah. We have pickle barrels. In fact, the last segment, we're all going to be wearing pickle barrels. I don't know if that was in your contract.
But I mean,
what does one do about the Republican Party? This is for both of you. If basically the Bush administration spending horrible, one of the biggest offenders since LBJ, if not the biggest offender, correct? Softening up the American people for an enormous intervention in the economy, stimulus packages, bailing out automakers.
We stone
so,
them?
But this is the Republican Party on the economic side. On the foreign policy side, we have an American people that are very unhappy with both of the wars.
And yet they elected Obama.
So what
and
the
Biden.
Hell? Yeah, but I mean, what's the other alternative? What do the Republicans do to sort of re-engage the American people and say, the Rush Limbaugh speech was embarrassing as far as, I mean, we need to be more conservative. We need to dig our heels even further.
Yeah, I think
further.
The clear answer is to go after the gays.
Yeah, it's like, I think we need to have to go over gay Arab countries if we could find one of those. Is there one of those?
I don't know. I'm all for saying no. I think that's a valuable thing to do. And I think there's a
in
lot
what
of...
capacity?
In every capacity. I think there's a lot of pressure sort of, you know, during dinner party conversation to come up with a positive agenda. Well, what's your vision of the future? My vision of the future is, I don't know, a lot like my vision of the past. How about this? How about you stop bothering me? How about you stop encroaching on my freedom? I find as a parent, I spend most of my time, the most valuable lessons I teach my children are things not to do. Take your hand off the stove. Take your finger out of your nose. Please don't do that.
Don't hit my stash.
That's exactly right. Stay away from my weed.
Property
stealing
rights.
Daddy's wheat.
Again, in the non-State of the Union address by Obama, Obama is going to be helping you being take more responsibility for your kids.
See, that's exactly the sort of thing I'd like to say no to in a very vigorous way.
And I couldn't agree more, but do Americans have the same problem that we all have with that?
They don't. And that's why it's important to make an articulate case for why not being helped is actually in your best interest.
Let's take a break, and we will come back to that.
Real men of genius. Today, Reason TV salutes you, Mr. Plagiarizing, Gaff-Prone, Hair-Plug-Wearing Vice President.
Mr. Plagiarizing, Gaff-Prone, Hair-Plug-Wearing Vice President!
Hello, folks!
You turned against the Iraq War, but you've dropped more bombs than George W. Bush.
My memory is not as good as Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts.
Why'd I pick this dude?
You're the perfect opening act for a president who wants to look good by comparison.
I tell you, man! I always liked The Rock, but I love her.
Never the lots of love.
And you're never afraid to call a spade a spade.
Who is articulate and bright and clean.
Joe!
When you're not pretending to eat at places that closed 20 years ago, you're pretending that other people's words are your own. When you're not creating the drug czar's office, you're talking crazy as all shit.
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven.
It's good to know that the vice president isn't evil anymore, just dumber than Dan Quayle.
Chuck Graham, state senator's here. Chuck, stand up, Chuck. Let him see you. Oh, God love you. What am I talking about?
All right, we're back. So we were talking about kids and Republicans.
Actually, we were talking
about... And, you know, by the way, Mark Foley was supposed to be here today, but we couldn't locate him. His bracelet wouldn't let him go this far up to, out of DuPont Circle.
Selling timeshares in Palm Beach right now, I think.
No, I mean,
or
I wanted
the,
to go back
Isle
to...
Isle of Crete, is it? Or where...
I wanted to go back
I
to...
I love Mark Foley, let me just say.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
yeah, he's entertaining.
Yeah.
That's...
No, and he also...
I defend Mark Foley.
No, he was the one behind the Child Online Protection Act. Another government encroachment of telling me who I can and cannot instant message. I think not.
Yeah. So anyway, the question about what are Republicans to do now, and your answer is saying no, I just think that their biggest concern should be to actually kind of become credible again, because they haven't said no to government.
So do Republicans need a period of time in the wilderness to regroup, to learn how to say no again?
For
and
people to get tired of the Democrats.
For people to realize that we are now living in Khmer America.
It's year zero.
Khmer puce.
In political terms, that's literally what needs to happen. No party has an opportunity until the last guy who got elected fails, period. Yeah. There wouldn't have been a 94 without a 93, the disastrous first year of Clinton. So, they're not getting anywhere until Obama's unpopular.
They were unpopular. I mean... Certainly, they would have no credibility in my eyes, and I realize it doesn't matter, but...
Because you voted how many times in your life?
Never.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
are you legal?
No, I am legal, but I'm not
a citizen of the world.
But let me tell you, I mean, those Republicans,
the daughter
of
Carlos,
talking about
the
French, I mean, those Republicans, it make the French politician look like Reagan. I mean,
well,
so,
but the thing is,
that,
I'm in France. I mean, this is the interesting thing. Having just spent way too long in Europe, 5 years, you have the opportunity in coalition governments with fractured sort of politics like you do in Sweden and France, is that if you're pissed off at both of these guys, you can pump up some idiotic third party run by a postman or something.
Yeah, which
you
haven't.
I like the frogs, and I wish the which right is, would defend them. I like.
Do you like the Chinamen too?
No, but I do like the frogs. Let me tell you why. No, I'm serious.
The krauts.
They like dogs. They like cheese. Their food is fantastic. They like themselves. That's why I like them. The French like themselves.
You know, they love
themselves. Yeah, I mean, they like Prozac too.
Yeah.
Do they really?
They consume, I think, 70% of Prozac in Europe is consumed by the
They're the most heavily tranquilized.
No, it's great.
It's great.
Well, I mean, it means they're depressed and then they're getting help.
But what do you like about it? You like the fact that there is a... there is a private sphere and a public sphere, and they try and keep them separate, so that there's actually a lot of personal freedom in France on some level.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't know that this is true either.
Yeah.
Because, you know, schools...
Medieval societies are pretty intrusive, I think. But I just like their
self... So what do you like about the French again?
I like their self-respect. I like the fact they like dogs. I think the women are pretty. It's a beautiful country. I don't know. They live well.
What about the men? Do you find the men attractive?
No, I don't. I find they're appalling.
Do you find any men attractive? Or?
No, but particularly not, for no offense or anything, French men.
I'm not a French man, so I'm fine.
Yeah. But if you were to say this at CPAC, and let's get back to your speech at CPAC, if you were to say that I love the French for X, Y, and Z reason, you would have been tomatoed off the stage, big hook pulled off, because you made the mistake of saying, and you were totally right, saying the New York Times is a good newspaper and conservatives should shoot for having facts in their journalism, and you were booed, right?
I was booed. Yes, that's correct. I mean, you know, they're always I've never been booed before.
Well, I know,
my life being booed.
Yeah, but you're booed for something
that doesn't hurt my feelings.
Yeah. No, I'm not worried about your feelings.
Here's the point I was making. Conservatives point out that the New York Times is a liberal paper and that its liberalism suffuses its news coverage sometimes. True. They keep pointing it out every single year. Mm-hmm. That's whining. And if there's one thing I'm absolutely opposed to, it's whining. That's one of the reasons I don't like liberals. They whine. Make your own newspaper. Go build your own news organizations if you don't like it. You know, stop complaining. I don't like complaining.
What is here's a broader question. What needs to happen for an effective opposition? I think everybody right here is really they were against George Bush overall. I mean, his economic policies were disastrous. His foreign policy, whether you agreed with its aims or not, was horribly executed for the most part. Socially, he was a retard. There's just nothing good about him. There's nothing good about Obama in terms of government growth, government intrusion. We're going down a road very fast.
Then why did all these libertarians support Obama?
I don't know.
That's a very good question.
Maybe they should apologize.
Yeah.
I think I am enormously opposed to libertarianism.
I didn't do that.
And I came across the same argument over and over again, and it was after 4 years of obsessive Bush hatred, for reasons outlined by Nick, were totally understandable. But the idea that it was okay to trade the American economy just so, three guys wouldn't be waterboarded again was not a trade-off that I was willing to make. But for some reason, and this is a debate that's been happening amongst Jonah Goldberg and Will Wilkinson and Brink Lindsey of libertarianism, I just don't see the connection. Yep. If somebody does, I'm sure they'll email.
And but, I think I pointed this out before. If they had called it boogie boarding, it would have been very popular.
Because the kids, the kids would have liked that,
I just don't see how libertarians can actually have any trust in government. And so that's the thing.
During the campaign,
I just couldn't see. I could not understand why people would actually trust that this guy would be different.
But I don't know anybody. I mean, one of the things that was odd is that none of the libertarians I knew, none of them even pointed to any of his campaign promises, with the exception of ending medical marijuana.
Well, no, they were talking about the guy wants change, transparency, accountability, which are just really buzzwords.
Okay, but so how do you create an effective opposition? Because saying no, as Melville said of Hawthorne, he says no in thunder. It's a great American tradition. There is some level of opposition to the way things are, the way things are headed. But how do you build an effective opposition? Because it's clear that the Republican Party is, going nowhere slow. I mean, there's a couple of people there who are actual fiscal conservatives and have some libertarian impulses, which is good. Conservatives, if they're following Rush Limbaugh, I mean, just get rid of them now. I mean, they're going nowhere. Rush Limbaugh is the past, and he's not going forward. How do you mount an opposition where you can say no and not and actually engage people as opposed to just being written off?
I don't know. I think it is engaging to say you are losing something. In gaining something, you are trading something, and the thing that you are trading is too valuable to give away, and it's your personal freedom. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And you're going to wake up one morning and not be allowed to make basic decisions about your life. What kind of light bulbs you install?
You mean
how much water's in your toilet?
That's what you're saying to the American people?
Absolutely right. I mean, look, I don't think... I actually agree with Rush Limbaugh to the extent I understand what he's saying in this way. The basic arguments against liberalism are still valid. Why are they invalid? Because we had a crappy president who was too dumb to understand his own rhetoric?
Yeah, but no. See, I think it's time for the Republicans to actually say that.
And stand up
to that reality and say to the American people, we've made mistakes. Mm-hmm. We actually didn't stand up for our principles, and now we're going to start fresh. We, like and reendorsing the principle that we used to believe in. I don't see that they can redeem themselves and be credible fast.
Well, the individuals responsible for what they did ought to leave. I mean, I think I'm a big believer in holding people responsible for their failure, and that pointing fingers is useful, and that people like John Boehner ought to step off the stage. And
he's got great skin, though.
He does. And he's actually he's an amusing guy, and he smokes, which I appreciate.
Right. Does he smoke?
Oh,
where do you
right?
think that skin comes
smokes
from?
Barley.
I
mean,
it's like a catcher's
Yeah,
mitt.
I know. He looks like Roy Campanella's second mitt in the 46th season.
Totally.
What about social issues? I mean, this is obviously a difficulty for Republicans now because, you know, I mean, all the trend lines show that America is becoming more tolerant and more liberal on issues like gay rights.
Right.
Abortion is a slower. It's a slower shift and it's stable. And you're obviously have joined Cato, I mean, which is obviously not a social con organization by any stretch of the imagination. So if you get back
there's
to the roots,
there's actual data that drug interest or support for marijuana legalization is at an all-time high.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. I mean, so now, like when Limbaugh says things that are, you know, rock rib conservative values have not gone away in America. And we should. What about social issues? I mean, isn't
there only two?
There are only
two social issues,
and that's gay rights.
The gay rights thing is tapped out. No one's getting elected on an anti-gay platform. That's over. I know that it makes you guys furious. The conservatives have campaigned on that. I sort of agree with you. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't even matter as a practical electoral matter. It's done. Okay, that's gone. It really leaves guns and abortion. Mm-hmm. And I think of myself as both consistently conservative and libertarian on both those issues. I have the right, as guaranteed by the Bill of Rights, and by natural law, to defend myself with a firearm. I believe that sincerely. And I think abortion is disgusting and horrible in the taking of a life. And I think
in all cases.
What do you mean in all cases?
In all cases. I mean that there's no...
It's either taking of a life or it's not.
No, but at what point does it become a life? Is it the same to have an abortion 6 weeks in as...
I don't think it needs to be the same. I mean, those are almost silly. It doesn't need to be the
same.
No,
actually, because
to say that it's wrong.
Yeah, no, but I mean, we have... I mean, I would argue that abortion is off the table in terms of it inflames certain people. Very few people vote mostly because of abortion, and there has been a consensus, which roughly follows the Roe versus Wade decision, for 35 years now.
I think that much of what you're saying is right. The one piece that is not right is that people don't vote on it. Very few people vote pro-choice. Some do. There is a very large percentage, I would say probably 20% of American voters, who won't vote for a pro-choice politician, period.
Well,
they vote on that issue.
Yeah, I think that most of the exit poll stuff shows that abortion is actually fairly down in any given
election.
So,
absolutely, but...
I don't know that it's... all I'm saying is, like, I actually think that that's pretty canceled
as an
issue.
So does that mean that the Republicans just don't have any social issues that people care about anymore?
Well, guns. I mean, guns are a resident issue.
Did you hear that? Actually,
gun rights are also settled fairly well in terms of the states have expanded, liberalized their carry permits and things like that.
Did you see they're introducing an amendment on the Senate floor today to link the vote with a gun, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the questions, though, is that are Republicans and Democrats in another way, electoral politics plays out at mostly a symbolic level, and we see this because whatever Obama is doing, it's not really qualitatively different than what George Bush was doing. I mean, whether it's stimulus or bailout,
actually,
et cetera.
It continues.
I'm saying it's in the same general
category.
It
looks like it's going
to
be considerably worse, though, doesn't it?
Bush on steroids. But it's the same. It's the same nature. I mean, we need...
I would like to think of it as Bush on cocaine, because it's sped up a little bit. No.
But, and much more talkative.
We're going to feel really bad in the morning. What I'm saying is that there's like a symbolic level. Yeah, that's true. It's a symbolic thing where the Democrats are more cosmopolitan, they're more sophisticated, they're more pluralistic, they're more tolerant.
But in fact,
and the Republicans
it's not
are
true.
Not.
But in fact,
no,
it's
I'm, yeah, but
this
I'm
is
saying,
the thing
but
I don't understand.
It's
like, why can't people see that the Democrats are, you know, no different than the Republicans? They like big government. Mm-hmm. I mean, Obama, Biden are hawks.
Yep.
I mean, in absolutely no different ways than the Bush.
They're all neocons.
Cheney. Yeah, they're all neocons.
I agree.
And why? I just don't get why people can't see it and why people have any faith in any candidates or
party.
Well,
but they're in fact they're much more intrusive. They're not the same. I would say Democrats have. in many ways, much more effect on how you live your private life than
Republicans Bush, in terms of regulation, the Bush administration was a total disaster.
It was worse
by far than Clinton. It's, you know, I mean, he's still doing stuff where the FDA or the USDA is regulating the size of holes in Swiss cheese. I mean, so it's there all the time.
But, I mean, so that's the thing. It's like we keep saying the Democrats are, and believe me, I'm no Democrat lover, but we always keep saying, well, the Democrats are worse than the Republicans. Factually, it's just not clear. I think they're all horrible. On different issues, they're marginally better than the others.
If you take the past 8 years, that is substantially true. The difference is, I think, is that you can actually reform the Republican Party. I hope you can reform the Republican Party. I think this is the actual sort of lifeblood, the marrow of the Democratic Party.
But if it's to reform them so the next time they're in power, they're going to act like Democrat again?
But, I mean, the thing is that what I think libertarians have to get away from is that 8 years of Bush were disastrous on so many levels that we do have to... at the same time, say that look on the stimulus vote in the House, they got a big donut hole from the Republicans, and we can question their motives, et cetera, and question the last 8 years. It's backwards looking. I think it's pointless, and just give them a certain amount of credit for being the only people that stuck their middle finger up and said this is a total disaster. How long do we go on?
They voted for the bailout.
I know.
But 150 of them didn't. Or at least the first time.
At least the first time.
Here's a question. Under Reagan and under Clinton, do you think, you know, 2 8-year periods,
spending went up faster under Reagan than under
Clinton? Do you think you got more free, or did people get more free on an individual level of making decisions in their life under Reagan or Clinton? Because we got richer, faster under Clinton.
Yeah, but it's not clear he wasn't building on...
I understand, but think about it. You know, when you talk about one of the great policy reversals under Reagan was changing the drinking age across America, which absolutely radically re-sculpted, you know, very personal decisions. It changed college life forever, or at least, you know, and like, how do you factor that into a question of like, Reagan cut taxes, which is good, but then, you know, other things like, you know, counteract that.
Well, he got rid of the fairness doctrine, and he got rid of the national 55-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Right.
And some of us were deeply grateful for that. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I don't know.
And that was purchased at the cost of raising the drinking
age. Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Using highway funds to affect social change is one of the most pernicious things any government does.
I don't even think Stalin would have come up with that.
No. You know?
Yeah. I don't think they had highways. So.
So are you hopeful for Obama, or do you want him to fail, like your friend Rush Limbaugh?
Well, I kind of was hopeful in that I thought by temperament he was a moderate. I was completely wrong. He veered left so radically that it left me bewildered. I think of myself as a pretty good judge of character. I covered the campaign for 2 years. I've talked to the guy. I felt like I had a good sense of him. The fact that he allowed the leadership of the Democratic Congress to write the stimulus bill was so politically unwise. I think it's gonna hurt him in the end, and so crazy on every level that it shook my faith. I think he's not as smart as I thought he was. I think his judgment is worse, and I think he's more an ideologue than I imagined. And I think my judgment about people is not as good as I had hoped.
But I would add to this the fact that he made all this big stink about no earmarks and accountability and spending on what works and passing a stimulus bill that has earmarks in them, an omnibus bill that's packed with, like, the latest round is like almost 9,000 earmarks in them. I mean, he hasn't signed it yet, but he will. And absolutely having nothing in the stimulus bill to actually guarantee that the money will go anywhere. That, you know.
I mean, is Obama's moderation, his centrism, has nothing to do with domestic policy and has everything to do with foreign policy, as far as I can tell. Is it say, look, you know, we're going to close Guantanamo, but, you know, those guys in Bagram have no rights and we're still going to bomb the shit out of Pakistan. I'm not the code pink candidate, is what he's saying in a lot of ways.
And
that's my moderation.
I think he's not that interested, and he understands he doesn't know very much about it and isn't grounded in it, and he's farmed it out to people who are preserving the status quo. Yeah. And
well, he's moving the Guantanamo prisoners to the D.C. public schools.
Which are really going to suffer.
Which will increase the average grade by 25%.
Well, on that note, we're going to end this episode of the Reason TV Talk Show. I'm Nick Gillespie. My co-host was Michael C. Moynihan. Our guests were Tucker Carlson, now of Cato Institute, and Veronique DeRugy of Mercatus.